Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Susan Wilson. The millennial generation is presenting perplexing problems for companies. Unlike almost every other generation before them, they're choosing to do everything later or not even at all, buying homes less frequently, getting married later, and maybe putting off car ownership. These behaviors have had us thinking about what values drive these behaviors. Joining us for the second half of our show is Christy Garten, founder and CEO of UChick Media and co-author of Marketing to the Millennial. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning.
And we also have Derek Feldman. He's CEO of Achieve, and he joins us from studios in Indianapolis. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning.
So my question is, for those who may not know, what's your definition of millennial generation? Because I've seen several different generations.
Sure.
I mean, several different definitions, rather.
Yeah, that's a great question to start. It is true. There are a lot of different definitions, age ranges that you see. I think, you know, just to ground the conversation a little bit for purposes of our discussion, the book that I co-authored, Marketing to Millennials, it was based on a study that is probably one of the most comprehensive studies of millennials as consumers, and it was conducted by a company here in Kansas City called Barclay. It's an ad agency. They teamed up with the Boston Consulting Group and Service Management Group to do this study, and the definition in that study was starting around 1977 to 1995. So, you know, using those numbers, you know, we're talking anywhere from 18 to about 34 years old.
So what were the main influences on that generation that create the millennials that we see today?
Sure. Another great question, and that's you know, typically the best way to approach, you know, new generations and understanding those big impacts that have happened. So I think for the millennials in particular, you know, we're talking about the Challenger incident in the 80s, you know, all the way up to the digital age that has been a huge driver and impact factor on this generation. 9/11, September 11th was another one.
Now, what makes them the largest consuming generation right now?
Well, just looking at their numbers, it's incredible. They are more than 25% of the U.S. population currently, and about, you know, a little over 80 million. So it's really within that year range that we just discussed. And, you know, that's what makes them so influential is really just their size. They're larger than the baby boomers, three times the size of Gen X.
So, Derek, you've done a number of surveys on the millennial generation. What did you find?
Sure. So we have been researching for the last 4 years specifically how millennials are engaging with causes on the nonprofit social sector side. And every year, as we've sort of gone down into this road of understanding what makes them trigger or participate, we've sort of come to this fundamental rule, or what we've seen happen. And that is that millennials are reacting to causes and not actual organizations. And that's even true on the consumer side when you look at millennials reacting to marketing messages that are not necessarily from a brand in particular, but what the brand does, how it helps the environment, or how the brand or product helps them. And on the nonprofit, on the cause side, what we continue to discover is that organizations that remove themselves first in the discussion and talk about the issue in which that the millennial can see themselves as part of that solution into addressing tends to get higher participation than we do those organizations that use the old marketing method of let's just put the brand in front of them 5 to 10 times and hopefully they'll react to it. We haven't seen that happen on the nonprofit side.
So, Derek, when you're talking about causes, how do millennials connect with causes that they believe in? What are the best ways that they're doing that now?
Yeah, and this is also, again, consumer-type behavior that we're seeing that's just overlapping on the cause side, is that the biggest influencer and driver is their peers. I mean, it is the small group of 4 to 5 individuals, their family, their friends, that are influencing them to say, check out this organization, this is what they're doing, or the cause issue that's happening. We continue to see that being the biggest driver of participation and connecting to the cause. And then in addition to that, it's usually fueled by a tactic of social media or any other type of marketing message, whether it be broad-based media too as well, and all different avenues. But the peer leverage is very, very important when we see that happening. And so what we have seen be very effective from causes and organizations is using more of a group mentality marketing approach that says, how can I find 4 or 5 millennials that tend to connect and discuss these types of issues with their four or five friends. Therefore, I become a facilitator of these small groups and messaging to these influencers within these small groups rather than looking at the whole generation as a whole.
Are you a member of the millennial generation? And what do companies need to know if they want to win your business? Kansas City, join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Now, Christy, Derek is talking about how peers are a big influence. But you say that also parents are a strong influence in terms of indirect buying power. What did you mean by that?
Definitely. Well, in terms of millennials' consumption behaviors and influence, significant. I mean, in terms of their direct buying power, $200 billion a year. But when it comes to their indirect, it's over $500 billion a year. But, you know, that's their impact on parents, their friends, as we were talking about, their influence on their peers. But it's also how their parents can influence them. And so this really gets to how millennials are one of the closest generations to their parents, more close than any other generation previously. And it gets to that
now, why
idea.
Why is that?
Well, I think last year a study came out, over 80% of college graduates are moving home to live with their parents. So it's literally like proximity-wise, they're very close to their parents, but they're also really great friends. I think, you know, when you look at cultural influences and, things that are popular among this generation, there's some continuity between what their parents like and what they like. Rock and rolls, you know, classic rock is still very popular with this generation. So they really do connect culturally. Stronger than previous generations to the older generations, and they view them as their best friends. So they often will turn to their parents for major buying decisions when they buy a car, when they buy a home, anything that's significant. They turn to their parents for advice on those decisions.
Now, speaking of buying cars, that's an area that marketeers, so to speak, are really trying to figure out. Derek, what's the issue with cars and millennials?
I think it's an issue with not just cars, but also other products in which that we're in a more shared economy type mode, which where we see millennials, you know, sharing and renting of things rather than looking necessarily at ownership per se. You know, and this is the popularity of Zipcar and all other types of models out there that use this shared economy where you go off of usage rather than necessarily ownership. And the generation, the millennials, have really taken that model, this shared economy model, much, much more aggressively than other generations. And, you know, they're some of the primary drivers to new services, such as like Uber and others that are using types of shared economy strategies. And I think that goes into, you know, part of as they look at using the things and from a more consumable standpoint, the stuff that they actually use versus having some car sit in front of their apartment that they never used as well. There's, you know, direct effects on the environment and so forth. And so they see ownership as not only just me owning it, but there are also other influences that challenge the things of communities or in the environment of me owning a product like
that. Yeah, and those are good points. And also it's important to you know, really point out that this generation lived through one of the greatest economic downturns in our recent history, and that has had a huge impact on their spending habits. They're very price conscious. They're noted for their frugality. So it really does push them to look for creative ways in terms of how they consume today.
Yes, because there's a lot been written about the fact that this generation may not be in the economic position to do even as well as their parents did in some instances. So you're saying that really helps drive this kind of shared economy model.
Definitely. Across all of their spending behaviors, price is the most important factor when it comes to making a purchase decision.
Yeah. And I would say, too, that when we look at when a millennial makes a consumer decision, it's also based on what value and perceived value there is in how they're doing it. So if I'm only going to need a car for, say, 2 weeks, why would I buy one that's going to be, you know, as Christy was saying, that why would I spend all of this money when the price should be much lower? There's a lower price point. I can just use it based on consumption. And so I think millennials are telling marketers and they're telling brands and companies, be much smarter in how you position the product to us because we're interested in using the product, not just having it stored somewhere.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Susan Wilson. With us today are Christy Garten, founder and CEO of Uchick Media, co-author of Marketing to the Millennials, and Derek Feldman. He's CEO of Achieve. Now, when you're talking about value, though, isn't it true that millennials feel that a product has to be well designed, though, for the price? I mean, it can't be a product that falls apart, even though it's cheaper, right?
Right. I think when it comes to purchase decisions, I mean, the product has to get all those basic things right, you know, across all of those decision-making factors. And then what it comes down to next is whether, yes, is it, you know, something that I can afford? Does it have those extra values that I'm seeking? Does it align with the cause? You know, there are some unique ways that brands are positioning their products to appeal to this generation. And, you know, the big issue of whether or not millennials are brand loyal, you know, are they loyal to brands anymore? You can build that loyalty. It's just you have to be able to define how your product meets those values that are most important to them.
And as a matter of fact, John is tweeting us and he says, I disregard brand names for cause. Absolutely. So is this kind of a millennial movement against brand and the brand establishment?
I would say that what we're seeing with millennials is that they blend work, life, social, faith, whatever, you know, all of those together. When they walk into the corporate headquarters and you know, scan their card to get in, they don't say, I'm going to leave all of my social, all of my cause-related interest at the door and just only work for the company or only work for this brand or even buy this product, is that it's a more holistic view. If they're blending all of those lives together and if they're heading to the store and they're looking at products that they want to use, the services and goods and the things that are happening, they're very interested in how that product is not only developed, it's designed, it's presented, and also has value into the environment and the community. And therefore, the brand is reinforced once they perceive that value is there, rather than saying, well, I'm just going to buy this because it's a Procter & Gamble brand or anything else at this point.
Yes. And I think that, you know, another point to make here is millennials, you know, are very savvy about research. And another distinguishing factor is how they're, you know, so smart and able to use digital devices when they're shopping, you know, knowing what review sites to go check out and really do that research. And from that study that this book I wrote is based upon, they, more than any other generation, seek out that extra information before they make purchase decisions in greater numbers than other generations.
So it's harder and harder for a company not to have its act together with regard to price, design, and all those things when the information is out there to be researched.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned loyalty. And Derek, you especially mentioned something about the fact that millennials will switch brands in a heartbeat. What drives the brand switching?
Well, I think there, and I was going to chime in into the same thing, and this overlays into this question, which is around authenticity and transparency. I mean, this generation is growing up in environments and have been in environments where social media is driving transparency with companies and authenticity constantly. And those social networks, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, are constant feedback mechanisms. I mean, these are mechanisms that allow companies to improve what they're doing. Now, some companies will look at that like it's just another audience that we got to deal with, rather than take it as an opportunistic piece. And the reason why people switch brands, and especially when we see it with millennials or even causes, is they feel that, A, there is no value there. There isn't any authenticity. I mean, it's so easy to spot now when somebody is not real on social media, and millennials will call them out on it. And also,
now give an example of maybe a company that doesn't have an authentic presence.
I think this really happened early on, too, when you see a lot of PR agents, quote unquote, working out in social networks. And you'll see a lot of posting of content that says, you know, for instance, today we're having an event or this is the new thing that we're doing. Well, that's not very conversational. It feels very robotic. It feels as if I am talking to a press release on a piece of paper rather than talking to a human behind a company or behind a brand. I mean, the biggest movements now that we're seeing in social networks in which that millennials are driving this is how do we create humanistic connections behind the brand to allow them to understand that, you know, it is Danielle behind the National Wildlife Federation's brand that's tweeting. And here's Danielle's personal social media connections to even show you that it's her. There's so much more perceived and higher value in that scenario than saying, well, here is big company and just like us, big company, because you think our products are very good. And we're going to just tell you things from our end and not challenge or talk with you about it.
Right, right. And related to that, I mean, this idea of simply greenwashing, saying, you know, that I simply support a cause and not really, you know, doing consistent work to address that cause in particular, it can easily feel disingenuous. And, you know, because of the transparency available through these tools, it's obvious. And so and one of the things we talk about in the book is this increase in interest in brands doing more what they call content marketing. So it's basically putting together a very consistent plan, putting content together that is of interest to millennials, things that they're going to be more willing to share with their friends, and really telling those stories and telling it in an authentic way and connecting with their consumers in a way that, you know, an advertisement in the past wouldn't. So it's you see more and more companies doing this successfully and really reaching millennials in a deep and consistent, authentic way.
So what are some of the biggest misconceptions, Christy, that businesses have when they try to reach out to this group or even retain them as customers?
Well, I think we were talking a little bit previously about, you know, brand loyalty, that this generation is not brand loyal. I think that is a misconception. And again, it's around this idea of, you know, understanding, you know, what values are most important to them and building a product offering and positioning in a way that speaks to those values. You can build loyalty that way. I think, you know, the idea, they're one of the most tech-savvy generations, and one of the findings in the study is, you know, they're 2.5 times as more likely to be early adopters. And so sometimes that can lead brands to thinking that, you know, if they add all the extra bells and whistles on to certain things that they do and really focus on that technology factor and really don't offer, you know, what, you know, meet their brand needs. I mean, really, it's meeting their needs in a way that maybe another product isn't. It's not necessarily, you know, how tech flashy your product offering can be. So I think that's another misconception is, you know, you have to have some, you know, really fantastic, you know, mobile app in order to reach them.
How about you, Derek? What are the biggest misconceptions that businesses have in trying
I would say that a big misconception that we hear a lot from businesses or organizations is the lack of interest in what we would say like a traditional product or a traditional cause or any of those. And I think it's one of those where, you know, can still Save the Children be relevant for millennials? Can American Cancer or, you know, can our oldest products still be used by millennials? And the answer is absolutely. The thing now that we have to do is shift our messaging towards that conversational engagement and invite them into a different discussion than we have with other generations. I think the second misconception that we hear a lot is that, you know, they don't give and they don't buy. Well, they do. And as Christy was saying about their discretionary spending, we often see that on the cause side, too, where their average gifts to causes in a year can escalate all the way as high as $350 in a full year. I mean, they're giving and they're buying, and that's happening. And they're doing that through their peers, and they're doing that by having conversations with brands about the services and goods that they're using. That's the point we need to make sure businesses understand.
Well, we have a call from Chris from Overland Park. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard, Chris. You have an observation.
I do. I own Pete and Repeat in Kent City or in Overland Park, and it's a very large consignment store. It's been around for about 26 years. And we kind of emphasize on the better quality garments. And something that I've observed over the years, as I've now gone through at least three generations of shoppers with three completely different socio-demographics in their shopping patterns, one of the things that I'm seeing about this generation that you're talking about that's different is, first of all, you had talked about their awareness of quality, and I absolutely see that. They are savvy to the qualities. A better brand and know the value of it. However, like you also said, they are conscious of their pricing or their price point that they're willing to pay. One of the things I thought was very interesting that I've observed is probably in the late 90s, I want to say maybe, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, that generation really loved to say, oh, I'm wearing a pair of Ralph Lauren pants that I got at Dillard's for $225. and everybody would ooh and ah over that. Well, that's not this generation. That's no longer the cool thing to say. They will say, okay, I'm wearing a pair of Ralph Lauren pants. They're very nice. I got them at a consignment store for $40. That's what's cool now. Not that they have the ability, they're not bragging on their ability to buy really high-ticket items.
Mm-hmm.
They love to brag on, hey, this is a high-quality item, and I am such a savvy shopper.
Well, thank you for that comment.
I got it at a consignment store, and I only paid $40.
Well, thank you for that comment. What about that? And does this whole idea about consignment shopping depend on what segment of the millennial generation you're talking about? Because I would imagine demographics here are key.
Right. That's a great
point. Urban, rural. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing there?
Well, you know, the study I've referred to definitely made an effort to take the population and segment it into different categories because, you know, you can identify some key attributes and values across the generation, but, you know, not everyone in this generation is alike. So, you know, I think it is very smart as a brand and a company, you know, to understand, you know, if you are targeting this young generation, millennial generation, you know, to understand which of the segments of this generation are the ones that are going to be your most brand favorable and build a marketing plan around that. So I think, you know, in the consignment case, I'm not surprised to hear, you know, that this the caller was noticing that this is a really, you know, interesting area and shopping opportunity for millennials because I think, you know, big value for them is that price consciousness and, you know, the interest in shopping brands that are within price range, but also has something unique to offer that they can tell their friends about.
So, Derek, one word. What do businesses need? One or two words need to know about marketing to millennials in summary?
You have to market to two groups. The first group is the peer influencer and the peer influencer's friends. So
okay.
You have to now develop two messages.
I want to thank our guest, Christy Garten, founder and CEO of UChick Media, co-author of Marketing to Millennials, and Derek Feldman, CEO of Achieve. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore the Clean Air Act. Up to Date is next, and behind the curtain, look at Johnny Carson and a chat with the founder of Costco. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Ross Steinmetz and Sydney Llewellyn. I'm Susan Wilson, and this is KCUR.